Hello, Market Watcher. I'm David Revell, and this is Value Side at the Close. Today, a return to normal, uncertainty over the Fed's next move. That and today's market recap, coming right up. Well, what an interesting week. The week began with a crisis on whether the Senate could come to an agreement on how to extend the national debt ceiling. The extension was needed so that the government could pay its bills. The good news here, the nation will be able to pay its bills now that they've reached an agreement, for a couple of months at least. And just look at it, we're only $480 billion more in debt. Good news, I think. Next came the ever-building energy crisis, where especially in Europe, people are having to pay through the nose for gas and heating oil. Don't worry, Jennifer Granholm, the energy secretary under President Biden, has the answer. We'll just release some of our strategic oil reserves. Oh, wait, scratch that. Energy Department says that won't happen. Okay, back to those higher oil prices. And finally today, we found out that the economy added not the 500,000 new workers that Wall Street anticipated, but less than half that number. This leaves us about 5 million workers below the level we reached way back in 2019. So how did the market handle all this back and forth? Just about as you would expect. Equities were mixed, with the large-cap Dow Jones Industrial Average gaining fractionally, tech-heavy NASDAQ and small-cap Russell 2000 and the S&P 500 all down fractionally. Gold and bonds were also down. Cryptos up. And above it all, oil just sailed along. After having been knocked out of the leadership role earlier, they easily assumed that number one spot today. Once again, energy is the best performing group for the day, the week, and the month. Just watch out at the gas pump. Stay tuned now for today's market comment, a look at labor. Well, today we turn a new page in the financial markets. This will be the first full week of a new quarter, a quarter that promises to be, I think, exciting and yet full of surprises. Now, you'll remember that on Friday, we discussed how exceptional the performance of the industrial sector of this economy has been. The numbers were sparkling. The Purchasing Managers Index was over 60, the only country in the world to have an index reading that high. And as the purchasing managers are the first step in the manufacturing process, we can read this number as the ready and willingness of companies to start the production process. They're locked and loaded, to use a favorite expression. Next, we saw that corporate profits were also at an all-time high, $2.44 trillion. Companies were back, making money again, and a major step in our economic recovery was taking place. What's more, this left corporations with plenty of cash to continue the expansion. Finally, we saw that the overall economy for the second quarter of this year was at a remarkable 6.7% rate of growth. That's over twice the rate that we were growing at before 2020. So here we are, purchasing managers locked and loaded, already buying the raw materials to begin production. Corporations recording record performances with cash on hand to do more, and the overall economy growing at 2 to 3 times what most economists expected. Really, really outstanding numbers, and ones we can use as we go forward this quarter to see if we can build on all of that. But remember, after all, those reports, the Purchasing Managers Index, the Corporate Profits Report, and GDP were all back then. They were all the second quarter. Today we start a new quarter, the always important fourth quarter, when most corporations prepare their annual reports to shareholders, and the final measure of 2021 will then be made. So as investors, we need to ask how this quarter stands up against the last, those record results that we just saw. In just a few minutes, we'll see the latest on new factory orders. Now, we would expect that this month would be higher than last. That would be consistent with a growing economic recovery. However, if, as I suspect, these factory orders are at the same level, or especially if they are lower, then we have to ask whether the economic recovery really is on track, or have things changed. Later in the week, we'll see the employment situation in the economy, and we need to ask the same questions. Are we still on track, or is the recovery starting to fade? We'll ask that question for initial claims for unemployment. These are generally workers who have been laid off, either because they were fired, or because the company is hitting hard times, or even closing altogether. Given those positive numbers we talked about earlier, initial claims ought to be declining. I believe that initial claims ought to be close to the 250,000 per week, the level that we were at before 2020. Instead, last week we saw they were at 360,000, almost half again higher than we were back in 2020. This is a huge red flag. It's telling you that the current labor market is not as strong as it should be. Finally, this week we'll see the latest numbers on business inventories. And this is tricky. Should businesses build inventories now if they see weaker sales ahead? An open question. In general, a slight build here would probably be the good thing. Put it all together, and this should be a very interesting week, the first full week in which we leave all those superlatives behind and move forward looking at the economy today. Can we sustain last quarter's growth? Or will we fall into a marked decline like so many on the street believe? It is, as I say, an open question, but we should start to see the answers this week. Well, yesterday the social media platform Facebook went down. Nothing too surprising here, that's happened before. But what was different this time is that Facebook stayed down. And during that time, the Cassandras immediately began to speculate whether Facebook would actually come back. And that remained the question for 6 long hours. Along with Facebook itself, their associated services WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger were also offline. Now, when Facebook did at last reemerge, the total downtime was more than 6 hours. And NetBlocks, a service which maps the internet estimates during that time, that Facebook and its customers lost an estimated $968 million. That, of course, pales in comparison to the nearly $6 billion that Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg lost in his depreciating stock. Facebook's stock fell by more than 4.5% yesterday. And at the end of the day, Facebook issued a blog post in which they said that their engineers had discovered that a, quote, configuration change to their backbone routers caused an interruption in their data center communications. Configuration change? That's interesting. This implies that someone took action. Someone, either internally or externally, changed the basic operation, the configuration of their DNS servers. But who? Or why? We're left to speculate. If internal, we can assume either incompetence or maliciousness. If external, we can almost assuredly assume maliciousness. No matter which answer one assumes, it does not reflect well on Facebook. And the reality is that we'll likely never know the answer, because once something like this happens, the big black box, which is big tech, answers are simply not disclosed. And if this realization just gave you a kind of queasy feeling, you're not alone. For over a month now, something has been happening to the big technology stocks, which for so long have been the leaders of this stock market. For over 3 months now, technology stocks have been declining as a group. Once the darlings of the street, lately the street has turned decidedly cold towards them. For the last month, they've been among the worst performers in the market, losing on average over 7% in value in September. Now, we saw that vividly yesterday when each of the big tech stocks, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Google, were all down more than 2% on the day, and as we say, Facebook down more than 4.5% just on the day. And using our favorite moving averages, it shows that Google, Apple, and Microsoft are now all down below their 50-day moving average, Facebook is below its 100-day moving average, and Amazon, somewhat surprisingly, is below its 200-day moving average. As a group, technology is declining. Now, my friends who are bullish on tech, and there are literally millions in this camp, they'll tell me that this is just a normal correction in a group that has been so bullish for so long. And of course, they're correct. This is normal to assume that a group that has a bull run for this long should be ripe for a correction. But there is also a time when your favorite toy lost its shine, and the luster came off that whiz-bang new gadget you got, a time when it was no longer leading edge and no longer invincible. I think we've reached that time in tech. We've seen its flaws, its imperfections, that tech can actually stumble like Facebook did yesterday. And I think that the stock market is in the process of reevaluating this group, pricing these shares in this new world, a world in which growth may not be as rapid and innovation not as fast as it was. It may be a correction, all right, but it may be much longer and much deeper than people now visualize. Well, ask just about anyone on Wall Street how interest rates are set, and they'll likely tell you that the Federal Reserve sets interest rates. And indeed, one of the Fed's principal committees is the Open Market Committee, whose principal responsibility is to set the Fed's monetary policy, of which short-term interest rates are a key part. You no doubt heard about their latest meeting, where the FOMC, to a great fanfare, set the latest short-term rates at 0.25%. Unchanged from what it's been the last several months. But these are only short-term rates, and technically only short-term rates for their member banks. What about the other rates, the rest of the yield curve, if you will? How are medium and long-term interest rates set? Now, to answer that question, let me introduce the world's most underestimated financial market, the $21 trillion U.S. Treasuries market. This market consists of all the bills and notes and agencies and bonds that are currently outstanding by the U.S. Treasury. And as you would suspect, this is a market that is constantly moving, constantly adjusting to new conditions in the economy and the financial world. Right now, the big jump in inflation is causing the Treasury markets to adjust to new assumptions on where this country is going. High inflation is being translated into higher interest rates. But it's a very subtle, very much under most people's radar process. Now, the best place to see these changes in the Treasury markets is by watching the weekly auctions that take place. Usually 3 to 5 auctions take place each and every week. This week, we've already had 2 Treasury auctions with a 3rd scheduled for tomorrow. Incidentally, you can participate in these auctions, if you like, by going to treasurydirect.gov. And in fact, most of the data that I'm sharing with you this morning comes from that website. Anyway, if you look at the Treasury's auction, you'll see that most of the yields are indeed moving higher right now, consistent with those inflation numbers. But the moves are steady, not very big, usually about 0.5 basis point higher in yield, or a yield increase of 0.005. Hardly anything to write home about. And this is a good thing. It shows a very orderly transition in the Treasuries as they go from historically low interest rates to a more normal value. What you're not seeing is the chaotic, disoriented Treasury market that we've seen in some countries like Venezuela a couple of years ago, when inflation went wild down there. What we're seeing here in the U.S. Treasury markets is exactly what we'd expect and hope to see, a steady, measured response to an overall environment of higher prices. So the answer to the question of who sets interest rates is, for short-term bank interest, the Federal Open Market Committee. but for virtually all other interest rates, and especially for long-term interest rates, the driving force is the U.S. Treasuries market, a free and open market moving to properly allocate interest. The fact that this market is proceeding in an orderly and measured fashion right now is very good news, and an indication that while none of us like inflation, it's not currently out of control like what we've seen in other countries. Well, if you thought it was especially quiet on the Evergrande front this week, you were right. Chinese financial markets were closed for a holiday. But tonight, about the time we're settling in with that nightcap, Chinese markets will reopen on their Friday morning. As it's becoming increasingly obvious that the eyes of the whole world are now focused on Evergrande, the major Chinese real estate company, which skates closer and closer to a financial disaster. And if you think that's a bit of an exaggeration, consider this. A U.S. Secretary of State, our nation's chief diplomat, someone who is in charge of negotiating between nations, a U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, is cautioning China to act, quote, responsibly in its workings with Evergrande. Really? We're now including corporate finance as part of the purview of the Secretary of State? Not the Treasury Secretary or Commerce, but Secretary of State? Fascinating. And it's all part of a global move to place some of these major corporations, particularly big tech, in a much higher status, somewhere just short of being an actual country themselves. In a recent Bloomberg editorial, we were introduced to the new term, corporate superpower. And it seems to be no exaggeration to say that there are corporations today which have reached far beyond their own home countries and impact a vast swath of the world. Look no farther than our own Big Five, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, and Google. Their range of services and financial scope go far beyond the USA. And Blinken, at least tacitly, is making that point about Evergrande. Should Evergrande default, something that appears increasingly likely, the impact, it is feared, will be felt worldwide. And Blinken's admonishment that China should act responsibly seems to be a recommendation that China should bail out Evergrande for the good of the world. It's clear that the fear of contagion has now hit foggy bottom. However, most Wall Street analysts now feel that China will not bail out Evergrande. Instead, it looks like the Chinese authorities will try to ring-fence the real estate giant and limit its impact, perhaps protect some of the financial companies and banks who are investors in Evergrande. But as for Evergrande itself, it now looks like they are on their own and will be allowed to fail. After all, just this week Fantasia, a lesser Chinese real estate firm, was indeed allowed to go under the waves. It's a very interesting, distinctly Chinese approach, and a real departure from how the Americans would deal with the problem. Bailouts, after all, have become a normal occurrence on this side of the Pacific. So here's a look at the Evergrande dance card over the next little bit. Everything begins tonight as the Chinese markets reopen after their week-long holiday. Then next week, yet another bond interest payment is due, and this is a brand new bond which we have not yet discussed. And finally, that 30-day grace period for the first set of bonds will expire, and at last those offshore, dollar-denominated bondholders who've been put on hold for a month, they will at last learn their fate. It's been a long, hard struggle with much more to go. The bond payment schedule for Evergrande continues at least through the end of this year. But in our immediate future, look for Evergrande's overnight trading to have a fairly substantial impact on tomorrow's U.S. markets. Well, in just a little bit, the Bureau of Labor Statistics will release the payroll numbers for the month of September. And by all expectations, we should see a jump up from the August numbers, In fact, Wall Street expects that the increase in payroll should about double the month before, with street analysts climbing over themselves to add higher and higher numbers, as expectations for this one are really reaching stratospheric numbers. In the latest release, Goldman Sachs is now estimating that 600,000 new jobs were added in September, topping the street's estimate of 500,000. The importance of today's job number is that it will confirm the Federal Reserve's goal of tapering the stimulus program. If the labor market is strong, goes the reasoning, then reducing the Fed's monthly bond purchase would be in order. It's kind of like a baseball double play. More jobs added equals stronger economy, results in reduced stimulus. Tinker to Evers to Chance. Neat. And it all makes perfect sense if your perspective is 60 days. While it is true that the expected September payroll numbers should be substantially higher than August, a longer look at results shows that it was August that was the real outlier. For the 3 months prior to August, job growth was steadily growing, reaching 1 million-plus new jobs in July. In fact, the 3-month average jobs gained before August was nearly 900,000. Then along comes August, and we could barely get above 250,000 new jobs. What happened? To date, no one has come up with a reasonable explanation for this truly disastrous August job growth. And frankly, I don't think anyone really knows. If I were the Fed, I'd be extra cautious here until I have a real understanding of what caused such a precipitous drop in new jobs in August. And I'm not at all sure that we're out of the woods yet. Historically, this time of the year is the most dangerous of all economically. It's no accident that most stock market crashes occur now. It's the time when corporations must plan for the next new year, and to take away support just as we're going into this season could be a mistake. For those of us who see this march towards tapering as a step too far, I'm afraid this one is already baked in the cake. Like that famous baseball double play combo, it's payrolls to Fed to taper. Consider it a done deal. And that's The Value Side for Friday, October 8th. I'm David Revell. Please join me in praying that our country may get back to work. Thank you.